Welcome back to Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. I am Ross Bolin, here with my buddy Barrett Dudley to bring you the best TV shows and movies weekly in an easily digestible podcast packed with laughs. Barrett.
Ross, excuse me, if I may here, take the floor here. This is just, I'm willing to talk to you about Succession or about The Boys, but this is just a note for all of the big media companies out there that don't want to give us any credit on their columns about companion podcasts. And I just it's very clear that they're the ones with the bias because they have such a hatred for the ideological mindset that we have here at Oystar Clamco. So, yeah.
This is your best work.
How do you feel about that?
This is your best work as an intro. This is your best work. Your finest moment. That was very well done, and so Kindle-esque. Yeah, but I did notice that we got tagged in this column about like a companion podcast and shit. We never get any love from those. It's weird.
Yeah. Now, thankfully, there's a glimmer of hope that might all be starting to change now that we are officially credentialed.
We are credentialed
at the Austin Film Festival.
We're credentialed
later this month.
Journalists.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody can take that away from us.
Yeah.
We have another fun show today. Obviously, we're going to be doing Succession, reliving episode, 9 of season 2. Only one more.
Niner? Did I catch a niner?
You
in did. There?
We call him from a walkie talkie. But we're also going to continue coverage of The Boys. I did not see the finale. So we're going to do 4 through 7? There's only 8 episodes in the first season.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk 4 through 7. I'm going to break down all the stuff I've seen for y'all.
A lot of meat to discuss there.
Sweet Lord.
A lot of flesh as well.
So many things happening. We're going to get hyped for The Joker because we're going to see The Joker as soon as today's recording is over.
Joker.
Which we're excited for. And yeah, let's get into it. This episode of OCC.
I'm really excited to see the story of Novak Djokovic.
Yes.
Also known as... His nickname is The Joker.
That's the documentary we're going to
see. And it's a documentary about
tennis.
A very good tennis player that's won many major titles, right? That's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, directed by Joaquin Phoenix.
Good.
I believe.
Yeah. Okay.
This episode of OCC is brought to you by Lisa, one of our longest running sponsors, if not our longest running sponsor. I would always argue that your mattress is up there with your TV in terms of important purchases that you make for your home. It's very important that your television in your living room and especially your bedroom are of an ample size so that you can enjoy your viewing experience, right? It's also important that you have a very comfortable bed to sleep in. Is it not? More important than anything else in your house, I would argue.
Lisa.
And Lisa makes the most comfortable beds in the freaking world. If you do not have a Lisa, I genuinely feel sorry for you. Lisa knows how important rest is to a better life. Lisa is the foundation of a healthier, happier you. And to Lisa, a bed is more than just a place to sleep. It's a place for relaxation and rest. All of their products have been thoughtfully designed to go beyond creating a comfortable bed to transform your bedroom into a sanctuary you actually want to spend time in. I sleep on the hybrid. The Luxury Hybrid by Lisa every night. It's made with premium foams and springs for enhanced pressure relief with edge-to-edge support. I also use multiple Lisa pillows. They're incredibly comfortable. The Hybrid, the most comfortable mattress I've ever laid eyes or body on, is fantastic. I couldn't more highly recommend it. It is phenomenal. I've been on it for multiple years now. Best bed in the freaking world. Lisa believes all people should have access to deep rest and relaxation, and as such, they make it easy for their customers to know they've made the right choice through their social impact initiatives tied to each purchase. Lisa donates one mattress for every 10 they sell through organizations that work in causes like foster care prevention. To date, they've donated more than 33,000 mattresses through more than 1,000 nonprofits. Lisa mattresses are made in the USA. In-home delivery and setup is available. Financing is also available. Don't miss out, Clam Fam. Live healthier. Live happier by resting deeper. Order today. Get 15% off any mattress for a limited time at lisa.com/dragon. Use the promo code dragon. That's LEESA.com/dragon. Promo code dragon. This month in October on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Not only will you be getting Movie Club, our Movie Club of the month is obviously Joker, the documentary about
Novak Djokovic. Yeah.
And we're excited to see Joker tonight, finally. We're going to talk about it a little bit at the end of the show, get hype for it. But yeah, you're going to get Movie Club Joker coverage, a full podcast, a full hour on Joker.
Play the hype horn button over there on the Rodecaster.
The Rodecaster?
Yeah.
I don't think we have the hype horn set up yet. I'll do it verbally. That's the best version of it we have right now is me doing it with my lips. We've got the Righteous Gemstones season 1 wrap up. Barrett, do we only have one left? Did they just do the finale? Or was that the penultimate?
I actually don't know because I've been watching.
You've been holding up.
I've been watching Du Bois.
Yeah.
Trying to get through all that, and so I've as well as the National Football League. And so,
and the Major League Baseball
and
playoffs,
the Major League Baseball playoffs,
and Austin City Limits Music Festival.
Also, that. So, I'm finished with Du Bois, and I will now begin catching up on Righteous Gemstones for next week. I think I left off after episode 4.
Okay, so the part of the reason I have not seen the finale of Du Bois is because I got way too deep into the Righteous Gemstones, dude. I was watching like multiple an evening. I think I watched each episode twice now, the ones that I've seen. And they're freaking hilarious. I think maybe the one that just aired this past Sunday was the penultimate episode, and the finale is this upcoming week.
Oh, yeah. This is correct, because the finale of Succession and Righteous Gemstones are on the same night.
Okay, so they lined up.
Yeah.
So then we only have one left. I'm worried about our boy Keefe. I saw Tony Cavallaro, our boy, the actor, tweeting something about Keefe, and I was like, oh my God, what could Keefe be getting into? I'm concerned.
That dang old Keefe.
Keefe. Excited. To do the Righteous Gemstones podcast on Patreon as well. We're going to do Fleabag Season 2, the full season, in one podcast. We're going to watch the whole season, and we're going to discuss the whole season. It's supposed to be one of the best seasons of television ever made. Hilarious. Won all these Emmys. Phoebe Waller-Bridge then stunted on everyone by smoking cigarettes in the most classy manner possible after the Emmys. And we're going to do Fleabag as well. Hotline Call Extravaganza will be available for members of the Mollusk Militia, our $10 tier on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. And then if that's not enough to entice you, I don't know how that could possibly not be enough, but if it's not enough, when you sign up, realize, you do gain access to our backlog, right? So, like, you didn't get it when it came out, and you missed a bunch of stuff in the past that was tight, but you can still go listen to it now if you want to. That's, like, the advantage of staying up on Patreon is obviously that you get everything when it comes out. But if for whatever reason, maybe you just discovered our show, you didn't even know we existed 2 months ago. Well, there was stuff done back then that you should go and listen to. And if you join now, you can go listen to it. Patreon.com/oystersclamscockles. Our $5 tier is the Crustacean Nation. Our $10 tier that affords you an additional podcast with your own exclusive hotline and the Mollusk Militia is available as well. Barrett, you ready to talk about Succession?
Yes.
Ready to talk about episode 9?
Let's succeed.
It was titled DC, simply DC. This is, oh, by the way, it's time for another board meeting of Oystar Clam Co. If that wasn't evident enough, stockholders assemble, executives line up. It's time.
Go get your official voting rights by signing up for our patreon.com/oystersclamscockles.
Yeah, this episode was written by creator Jesse Armstrong. And we start off with the family gathering around the television to watch the weasel.
So I had to comment on the, they've done this a couple times where the episode starts on like the heavy dramatic violin with Logan just like walking through New York.
Yes.
You know, with his like bodyguards.
The cold open.
The cold. And it's like even more than the cold open really, right?
Yeah, it set the tone for like.
Is it the cold open? He's just walking around, and then it goes right into the. Anyways, I really like when they do that. The show, this episode specifically, had it opened with that super dramatic violin, and it ended with the super dramatic violin,
right?
And it like makes it feel like, I don't know. It's almost like a musical cue from a musical.
Yeah,
it's very theatrical.
Yes,
and it's awesome.
Yes, and this one, the tone, the dark, that tone struck in the beginning, the darkness carries throughout. I mean, there was like an added layer of, it's almost like it removed a layer of the comedy and added in a layer of intensity this episode.
Yeah, although
there were still some very funny moments, don't get me wrong.
Again, this was one where I just like, I thought this was a phenomenal episode, and I was actually worried about this one based off of the trailers.
So was I. I was
because
too,
I was
weirdly.
Like, the trailer made it seem like it was going to be all
the hearing.
Yeah, the congressional hearing.
The congressional hearing, which instead was only like 10 minutes,
right? Instead of everything that was happening behind the scenes during, like before, during, and after the congressional
hearing.
Then
that's what we got.
So it was awesome, and then obviously the congressional hearing gave us that hilarious Kendall Roy monologue. So
I mean, just that was so next level and so on point. Like, and we've heard that monologue or a version of it done so many times. That yes, it was incredible. We start out gathered around the television to watch this accountant weasel whistleblower give his interview about where all the bodies are buried.
Yeah. So another quick note here, right off the bat, some people had the idea and tweeted at us that Greg was the weasel after last week, which I thought was like an outside possibility, but like not really like what I thought they were hinting at.
Yeah.
So this just right away confirms the weasel is this dude that's on TV.
Was always this accountant,
right,
that they were aware of, that had this information that was going to come forward, that, you know, I think they say he's trying to spin it into a book deal or something
right,
like that.
Yeah,
they accuse him of that.
It's a book deal, baby.
Yeah, so Greg comes in. I can drink these drinks. These are drinks for people, right? That's one of his great comedic lines of the episode. He also tells us he has walked away officially from a $250 million inheritance to be a part of the Logan Roy shit show.
Yeah, so another a confirmation there that inheritance was basically all his.
Yes.
The $250 million was Greg's,
which
that he walked away from.
Connor and Tom explained to him, because his mom has assured him he'll get $5 million no matter what. So he's like, I'm gravy. And then Tom and Connor explained $5 million is just, you're just poor the rest of your life because you can't, it's too much money to work, but it's not enough money to afford you the lifestyle you want.
This was one of those. This was just like a fabulous little analysis from them about about that level of money, which was like, sadly, feels very true.
It's incredibly accurate about wealth.
Obviously, that is taking a step and removing yourself from the fact that obviously $5 million would be nice to have for anybody, and that there's
that's a ton of money.
All sorts of, you know, hey, guess what? There's worse places to be in than having $5 million.
Uh-huh.
But as far as the wealth spectrum goes,
that's nothing.
It's a really shitty spot to be, because exactly like they say, it's not really enough money to just coast on
for the rest of your life,
having a glamorous life for the rest of your life.
Right. It's enough. It'd be enough to afford you a nice middle class lifestyle.
Yeah.
Through retirement, probably. But the entire time, you're wondering, could I have had more?
Yeah.
And that's what eats people.
Right.
Everyone. And like, that's why no one ever, I mean, you never hear about people walking with $5 million and then just going and living out their life in a nice, comfortable, in the hill country. And you don't hear about that shit. Well, first of all, because they never come back. But second of all, because it doesn't happen very often.
It's a tough number. It's a tough number.
Yeah, I love that bit that it just sort of gave. Well, first of all, it made me wonder, how much money does Tom have? And then it made me laugh at the fact that Connor doesn't even really have any money of his own. And he still has a perception of wealth and how it works. And it was just, there's just so much. There's so much in these little back and forths that you can pull from between these characters.
Did you like that I liked the awkwardness of them like trying to shrug off the whistleblower.
Yeah, it was
on
so
TV.
Realistic, man.
Like, oh, that guy, oh, he sucks. Like, they're just desperate to like make it
oh,
not
shit,
as big
Tom.
Of
a Worms game. Like, dude, they were yes, it was everybody making the awkward jokes to try to make light of the situation as they watch this fire start and unfold.
That was good.
So the guy ends up highlighting decades of sexual exploitation and harassment under Uncle Mo Lester,
whose last name was McClintock, which I have to think is that a reference to Mike McClintock from Veep?
Makes me think John Wayne movie.
Mm.
It's a John Wayne, great John Wayne movie. Yeah, it turns out we knew about all the sexual exploitation and harassment, not so much really about the unexplained deaths and passengers overboard. Like, that part was sort of like a footnote before, and it kind of became more important this episode.
Yeah,
because lives might have been lost here, and then buried.
Yeah, especially with the I think we got it right here about here, but the whole what was it?
NRP,
no real person.
NRPI, no real person
involved. Yeah,
yeah, which is all the sex workers, the migrants, anybody that wasn't a passenger or a member of the staff was NRPI, no real person involved, and that. What's the word for when there's like four letters that stand for a sentence or whatever? Not analogy.
An acronym.
That acronym, I did it. That acronym really rung true as well, because that's the type of thing that you hear thrown out in these weird corporate situations that get super mishandled and inappropriate. They often have these strange acronyms there because it makes it less human. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that they had to do. So after the interview is all done, Kendall and everyone is trying to assess how bad the damage is. And he's like, so bad, bad, but, and Roman's like, yeah, but not too bad. And he goes like, bad, I think, very bad. And Frank's like, I would agree, bad. Roman says, yeah, it's obviously fucking bad, Frank. We're talking about how bad. And then Hugo, I love this line. Well, just from a PR perspective, I wouldn't want anyone to underplay how bad it was. So he wants to make sure, flat out, let's not downplay the horrific nature of this situation. And from there, the family decides, like, what? Basically,
they're gonna cook Bill. Basically,
Bill's gonna be the scapegoat.
Bill's the scapegoat. He's fucked.
Now somebody has to be cooked.
Yeah,
and it's gonna be Bill.
Yeah, and that's where Roman drops the line, "Protect the egg chamber." And I don't know what that's from. My initial thought was that sounds like something from Jurassic Park.
I guarantee you it's not from Jurassic Park. I think it's a weird line from like an anime or a fucking video game or something. That's what Roman's character would make me guess.
If anybody knows why Roman goes, protect the egg chamber.
Protect the egg chamber.
Then please let us know. Because yeah, a quick Googling of Protect the egg chamber
doesn't bring you anywhere.
Yields almost nothing.
It takes you to some strange places, but nowhere with an answer that you're looking for.
Yeah, like the something called the a book called The American Poultry Advocate from 1915,
which surely is not the reference
that Roman
is making.
I don't think that is what Roman's quoting.
That would be like the most Family Guy joke ever forced into an HBO show of all time. Like Family Guy always makes those extremely obscure references to like 1920s movies that only Seth MacFarlane has seen.
Yeah.
And then riffs on those jokes for like four episodes, and you're like, for the love of God, I've never heard of this person.
Yeah.
Roman did that.
Yeah, but they're gonna try to throw Bill under the bus, like, and just let it run him over multiple times in the hopes of kind of, you know,
seeing things dissipate.
Right. But so, then I think this is where they come around to the idea that Jerry and Tom are going to have to definitely going to have to talk
at the Constitutional
Committee. Yeah, they're going to be the warm-up act.
Right. So this is the interview.
And answer some of the harder questions.
Yeah, the interview sort of
before they get to
them
Kendall and Logan.
To strategize about how they're going to handle the Constitutional Committee more seriously almost. Yeah, so then we get to that, the Constitutional Committee. And Tom gets up there. He's the first person we watch, and he bombs. And he bombs. Historically, he does not handle the pressure well, Barrett. He folds like a chair. He starts just saying things. He's fucking sweating up there. He looks so guilty. They couldn't have chose a worse person, frankly, to take the stand.
No. Yes. I thought you meant, do I know of him? But I know him.
Okay. Yeah. No, this is, yes. It all gets very confusing when you're up there giving testimony under oath. At one point, he sort of throws Greg under the bus. Why is Greg freaking out after Tom's testimony?
Because they have the logs
of all his emails.
And the log that says the person that removed like boxes number 158 through 161,
right,
and had them out for 3 hours was Greg.
Oh no, Greg!
He had to put his name on the log.
Oh, Greg's gonna get subpoenaed
like an idiot.
Damn it!
You know?
Okay, yes. So now Greg's involved in a more.
Greg is very involved
in a much more
they
serious
know Greg.
Manner.
They know Greg Hirsch's name is, you know, it's on the docket.
Just like old Tobias. Nobody can shut up about this Funke around the water coolers. Man, I can't believe we went there. But the congressional hearing goes horribly for Tom and for Greg. Then they run Logan, Roy, and Kendall out there. And Logan at first is handling it pretty well. Then he starts to falter a bit. And then he just straight up sort of like throws Kendall under the bus. He's like, actually, you know what? Now that I recall, I believe that was under my son's time as head of that area. And they're what area is that? And he's like, the area you're asking about. And they're like, you're not going to give us, okay, Kendall, how about you? And then Kendall gives his epic monologue in response to all the accusations and crushes it. I mean, that was, I even found myself.
Yeah, wait, like, it was very nice. It was beautiful deflection.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, man, fuck these people. But then I was like, wait a minute, no, this show does that to you though. It has you like conflict. That's the thing when you have these antiheroes, you become conflicted, finding yourself root for like Tony Soprano to murder someone. But then you're like, wait a minute.
There were also just like it was just really in you know, this show is kind of. Had like some political undertones, but then this is their first kind of foray into the political forum itself. You know, they're right there. They're in DC.
Yep.
So it's kind of interesting to hear like at one point Logan is in the war room basically. And, or this might've actually been back at the house when he's like, call our boys down in Florida.
Oh yeah.
And it's just like, it's always kind of a bummer to think about it when you're like, all these various congressmen, senators, they're all beholden to
somebody,
whoever is lining their, like, you know, their re-election campaign coffers.
Yeah.
You know, so like Logan has the dudes, his Florida boys that he's going to try to call.
Like one of whom
was probably the one that was like, what was his compliment?
My wife enjoys your programs. He's talking about how they went on one of the cruises.
They loved the cruise.
No one in their family was murdered on the cruise. There were no NRPIs in their family.
That was also a beautiful little throw to like.
It was okay, but
all these hearings are partisan.
Yes,
and whichever side like
is backing,
favors
backing the person.
Yeah, like just like tosses the. Fucking dumbest, easiest questions you could possibly imagine.
It's the most blatant, transparent bias you will ever see is in a congressional hearing where one side is backing the person questioned.
Right.
And we see that here, and it's very heavy-handed, I'll say that. The guy was like next level.
Oh, it
like,
was hyperbolic.
He was almost like a nitwit, and it's like, come on, man. That was stupid, but I appreciate the effort to get that realistic angle in there, and even if the dude was sort of a buffoon. I understand why they did it that way. But the big thing with ATN and the big thing that the most realistic piece of all that was they then run with Kendall's monologue as the angle. That's what they push to all their viewers. That's the exact message that, look, these guys are actually just attacking Logan Roy and they don't like his beliefs and they don't like his, so it's that shit is so funny and so real and so how Fox and CNN do each other constantly every freaking day. And it's just the fucking worst, but it's more fun to watch in the fake world of Succession.
Very far more entertaining
than it is in the real one. Speaking of like politics, let's talk international politics. Shall we? Logan entrusts his son Roman with the huge assignment of going to, I think, Turkey. Is he in Turkey? It's a Turkish bank that he wants him to lobby to take Waystar private. This is that same angle with the soccer team guy.
Yeah. I don't really know. What I do know is fuckable dry powder. No strings. What the hell does that mean, Logan?
I have no idea, dude. I really don't.
Fuckable dry powder?
I have no clue.
But so this episode also, you know, I had subtitles on for most of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably noticed a lot more of this because I think you more regularly watch with
the
subtitles.
I only watch subtitles, yeah.
Some of the language that they just like toss around in this show.
Oh, yeah. Is,
like when Rhea bids goodbye with a, what did she say? Like tally pip?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't catch that.
She says she leaves.
Tally Pip. It's definitely not Tally Pip.
Dude, it is something like that. I swear to God, she's like, oh, well a pip.
That is how she would say bye, though, if I imagine in my, and she's like a little fairy person to me.
Yeah, I don't know. And then it was in Succession, blare the horn, play the music, with Logan talking about fuckable dry powder, no strings.
Okay. Well, yeah, there are constantly phrases and terms thrown around on this show that you don't know, that none of us know, that you wouldn't know unless you were in one of these situations. But it's also phrases and terms and shit that you see
toodle
elsewhere.
Toodle pip. I do have it down here.
Very nice.
Toodle pip. That's what she said.
And when you're watching with subtitles, that shit hits constantly. Like, you're constantly like, wait, what the fuck was that? What? I understood three words in that 25-word sentence. It's crazy. But Roman's been given the assignment of lobbying this Turkish bank, and He goes over there, I believe to Turkey, and gets into like a Turkish hostage situation.
Now, I have no idea what actually, like, what the politics or what actually happened with the
hostage
situation.
They didn't do a good job of letting it. I get that it's supposed to be vague.
Vague.
Intentionally vague,
yes.
Because we never would find out exactly how a situation like this unfolded.
Yeah.
Probably. Accurately, I don't think, based on the people in the room, but... this is the most unrealistic or silly part of the storyline to me.
They're having a meeting with the guys. They want a huge bump in capital, an injection, if you will.
In exchange
from these guys. To
ownership.
Take, yes. Where they, combined with them and the Roys, they need to own, I think it's just over half.
Mm-hmm.
So that they can pull it off the open market.
Okay.
So they can go private.
Got it.
With it. No longer a tradable stock.
So that they can't have control taken away from them
by the shareholders.
Shareholders and board members and whatnot.
So that's where they've gone to get it. I didn't even realize it was in Turkey.
But that part makes sense. The explanation makes sense. I'm like, okay. But then you start to explain, okay, who's the person they're getting it from?
Yeah, I don't know.
That's where I'm like,
a foreign billionaire.
I don't know who this guy is. I'm not clear on his dad. I'm not sure about their situation politically in their home country or what the hell is going on here. None of this is clear to me at all. And it's not just that. It just seems, with everything else going on, you're like, okay. And then there's this, and you're like, wait, what? Romans in Turkey being held hostage by potential terrorists or some sort of insurgent uprising? Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it also was kind of funny. And I was sort of hoping one of them would be executed, but nobody was. And so I just wonder where they got the inspiration for that storyline, for the Turkish... for trying to get the money from this foreign billionaire and then that somehow becoming a dramatic situation where... Anyway, it still seems they're very much leaving that in the wings. Like, that option
absolutely.
Has just sort of kept walking along with us the whole fucking season. We've never seen any real momentum. We've seen Roman and this guy do coke. We've seen them buy the incorrect soccer team. And now this. It's bizarre. Oh, Roman giving a speech.
Go,
to
you lovely bastards.
That was...
that awesome, yeah.
The worst sports speech ever made.
Roman and his bum boys, as it were.
Uh-huh.
And, right. They're on an Asian vacation. It's a dipshit, a sex pest, and a grand old Duke of Dork.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's how Roman describes
it. That's how he described
the affair,
trio.
The trio.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a solid squad, admittedly.
Laird, Carl.
What else? Shiv.
Crazy Carl.
Shiv talks a sexual harassment victim out of testifying.
Sorry doesn't put the Triscuit crackers in my stomach. No, does it, Carl?
No, it doesn't. I wish you'd mentioned that you had delicious Triscuit crackers when we were in the car. But Shiv talks a sexual harassment victim out of testifying, which is like really disheartening to watch. And then you start to realize like, wait a minute. Does she have an angle here? Like, I think she realized she could use this woman to possibly... take down her own father and put herself back in a position of power as a potential successor.
Yeah. This one was tough to read. I think that she's honest pretty much that she wants what's best for her. So there's got to be some way that this is going to directly benefit her, arguably that she has saved the company by convincing this woman not to testify and is owed a large debt of gratitude.
And
right?
I was thinking like even a step further, this woman is now sort of in her pocket, not Logan's. And the information she has hinders Logan. It's almost a blackmailing situation almost. Like,
oh, where she could like...
she can use this woman.
She can now...
to gain leverage.
Push this woman to...
do whatever she wants.
Go to the news now at whenever
point
if she needs to. Yeah.
Right. Or stay quiet if she gets what she wants.
Yeah, it's definitely a card for her. And I mean, you know, Jesse Armstrong after the episode like made a good point. It's like you're rooting for this woman to take down the company because you know that they're horrible people that have done horrendous things.
Just wildly immoral, yes.
But then you think about it like the question was a good one. Like if it was your mom or your sister or your wife or somebody that was about to be like under fire for going public like this, I mean, it really, like Shiv's not lying about that. It ruins your life, basically, to become a martyr like that.
Right. That angle she hits her with is not inaccurate.
Yeah.
That is the downside for a victim coming forward, is that you do have to carry the shitty stigma with you forever. And it's part of what we've obviously tried to combat as a society heavily over the past 5 years, especially. But it's a very serious problem still. It's a serious element of that type of situation that Shiv paints perfectly for her and sort of says, like, look, you can go that route and let it ruin your life, or you can work with me and we can fuck these people from the inside.
Yeah.
And that's what made me like, obviously she's going to use it to benefit herself. And to what extent, I believe that implied she would take out her own dad.
Or at least gain back the leverage to become...
Well, she already has that. Like, this is
the success.
Yeah,
right?
For sure. Yeah. Like, you would think this alone, just having this chick, having talked her off the stand, should be the leverage she needs. But then having her in her pocket is like... Because Logan is not making decisions logically. He's not thinking straight still. He has that moment on the stand where, again, we see him falter. We see him waver. We see him fog up and not really understand what's happening and sort of just pass the mic to Kendall.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for me to believe that he's going to make the logical decision of reappointing Shiv or, like, letting Shiv back into his inner circle and really trusting her again. So I don't know what he's going to do, and I do appreciate that she has that sort of angle of being able to potentially have to blackmail her own father. In the end of the episode, Rhea, the woman that they have chosen, the tiddlywinks, whatever she says, tip-tamaloo or skippity-doo-dah.
Toodle-pip.
Skippity-doo. Anyway, toodle-pip.
Toodle-pip.
The woman they've chosen to be the bulletproof vest for the company, the woman they've chosen to be their junior soprano, the false head that they're going to let take the fire and hope that everything will go away and that she can just be the one who's their scapegoat. She walks away from Logan and Roystar Waco entirely before they can even really use her. Like, did they even get any of the benefits of Rhea at any point here? She avoided the stand. She avoided any questioning. She avoided any interviews, to my knowledge. She never really had to do anything. And then she's able to walk. Like, they were already choosing other scapegoats like Bill and shit. But Rhea was still there. And they're not even like, it's just bizarre to me. They didn't get what they wanted.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. And then, I mean... bigger picture, show-wise, you know, kind of like what purpose did she serve at all, really?
I guess it's just being
just a new face.
Another speed bump?
Right, yeah.
Another obstacle?
But that's a good question because it doesn't seem like current. I mean, and Logan was obviously very frustrated that she was...
Leaving, yeah. That she was going to walk.
And I don't know why, you know, if that was just a pride thing, an ego thing.
Or he really cares for her. Or that really fucks something up.
Yeah, or if that's kind of what I'm wondering. If, like, does that
but it doesn't
screw
seem,
something up?
Yeah, it doesn't
I'm not
seem
sure.
It would affect anything.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. And the other thing, one other big note, that Logan did mention in this episode that it was time for a blood sacrifice. I believe
he
said that
to Shiv. The end. That's the final, the closing scene is them watching the replay of Kendall's congressional hearing and talking about how it's going to be time for a blood sacrifice.
Right.
Played to the tune of more incredibly dramatic violin scoring.
Right.
So, yeah, who you got? Who you think?
Well, the obvious choice is Tom.
So Tom is where your head immediately goes.
Right.
Because of
what's
just
been happening.
Happened.
Well, and what's been happening all season, right? We've had this fear, okay, Tom's clearly in a spot here now as head of media where he could be thrown under the bus and be the scapegoat. And after this congressional hearing, yes, he's the obvious, like, well, maybe it'll be Tom. But it almost feels he's sort of already been done his bus work.
Yeah. So I sat there after the episode and like just like kind of ran through it and thought about it for a few minutes afterwards. And I actually think that this could be Kendall.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Man, that would be awful.
Like that this is what Logan has been keeping him close for.
But in what way?
So my thinking here is that if he leaks the real story, that's a much bigger and more salacious story than this shit that happened on some cruise ships 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And that it basically pushes the narrative to Kendall Roy committing manslaughter.
Right.
And being ousted from the company. And it like basically allows the cruise line fiasco to blow over.
Man, that would be...
Maybe they like... In the congressional hearing... Logan, you know, he throws out that line where he's like, you can talk to my son. He was actually head of that.
Maybe that was the seed.
That could be the seed. So if they drop him, release that news and just like completely screw
it all on him,
then they can just pile it all on him and then they have their head.
Yeah, that would be brutal. I think
Tom's not actually blood either, right. Which is why that
blood sacrifice. But he is going to take married in, which is like why you could see him being the potential angle. But yeah, the only thing
Greg's an option too.
You hit the nail on the head at the end, though.
But Tom or Kendall seem the most likely.
You have to be able to bring in the cruise ship shit and put that at his doorstep too, though. Otherwise, because I don't believe the Kendall story would result in the blowing over of the cruise ship thing. I believe it would be added almost. Like, look how, see, they're even shittier than we thought. But if you can somehow tie him to that and make it his fault.
And I mean, two's better than one, right? So if they can give him Bill and Kendall.
And maybe Bill still gets burned too. But I was almost under the impression that like by the end of the episode, like Bill was supposed to be the sacrifice. And then he was like so nice that they couldn't even do it. Right?
Yeah.
He's like, here for you guys, really rooting for you. Golly gee, it's good to see the whole squad together again. Let's go do this congressional hearing, gang. He was just the nicest fella. You know, but I don't know. We're in a
good
spot.
Nice. That was really nice.
Yeah. One more episode.
One more, man.
We only have one more episode. This season has gone very, very well through nine episodes.
Yeah, it has.
I would say it has been even better than season one. For me, and if they could close, we're in a good spot.
Yeah.
With this series.
Yeah,
we're in a very good spot.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe season three is just all for the conheads out there.
All
right?
The conheads.
I'll just that's who we dedicate season three
for. I love him having one nut job come up to him and support him. Because there's all these idiots have supporters.
I also laughed at. I mean, you know, not like laughed, but. The protesters outside of the congressional hearing had signs that said "Rape Star Shitco."
Okay, that's good. That's good jokes.
Yeah,
good protester
but
jokes.
Mine was better.
Yeah, yeah.
Oyster Star Clamco for life, baby. No,
of course.
But I just thought it was funny that they used a play on the company name.
Yeah, just like we did.
Just like we did.
That's still better than Roy Cunt. Which is what the Scottish protester had on his sign in Scotland. It was one guy, and all it said was Roy Cunt. Love that.
Yeah. I would give this show an A+. Awesome plus incredible.
Indeed. Well, let's move forward. We'll be back next week, obviously, to talk about the conclusion, the finale, episode 10 of season 2 of Succession. This episode of OCC is also brought to you by HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh makes cooking delicious meals at home a reality, regardless of your comfort in the kitchen. Personally, I am not a great chef, not a great cook, don't have a ton of experience. HelloFresh delivers step-by-step recipes with pre-measured ingredients. It's incredibly easy. You can have a wow-worthy dinner on the table in just about 30 minutes. I'm serious. I'm probably the most ignorant person you're going to encounter in the kitchen, and I was afraid going in. And I was stupid for being afraid because it is that easy. Like, I routinely eat like a six-year-old. I have very limited cooking skills. HelloFresh, I am still able to conquer. That's how good their step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients and everything is. The whole program's fantastic. There's something for everyone, too, from family recipes to calorie smart and vegetarian. They have fun menu series like their Hall of Fame series, their Kraft Burgers. They have more five-star recipes than any other meal kit, so you know you'll get something delicious. HelloFresh is flexible and fits your lifestyle. You can add extra meals to your weekly order, as well as yummy sides like garlic bread and cookie dough. Easily change your delivery days if you need to, change your food preferences, skip a week whenever you need. It's very customizable. For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/OCC80 and enter the code OCC80. That's like getting like eight meals for free. HelloFresh.com/OCC80 and enter OCC80. Barrett, quickly, I wanted to tackle our top five for this week, our top five of an actor or actress. And I've chosen Jack Nicholson.
Okay.
As our person to do. As I researched Jack Nicholson's IMDb, his resume, went through all his best movies and works and all these different sites ranking Jack Nicholson's movies and such, as what I do for each one of these, I noticed, man, this motherfucker has been at it for a minute. And not only has he been at it for a minute, he really caught stride in the 70s. And then he sort of carried that fame and icon status through to the present day, but has not done a ton of shit in like the last 20 years.
No, he is now at this point, you just said it, I think you used the right word. He's just an icon at this point. And he, yeah, that's because of his 70s work.
Yes.
By the way, are you familiar enough with like the dialogue around film history to know that like the 70s is considered like the era for like real films?
Yes, in a general sense, yes.
Yeah, like real film buffs and critics and movie people and just like the industry in general is like, when we lament that the only thing we can go see in theaters anymore is Marvel movies, basically.
Right.
It's like, they don't make them like they did in the 70s anymore.
Ah, that's when the original work was coming out.
That's when like gritty, hardcore movies, and the one that we're going to go see later tonight is like, pulls a lot from...
One of those.
Taxi Driver.
Taxi Driver, yeah.
Which is another one of these like gritty 70s, like real film classics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like so I think Easy Rider.
So I think that's why that's one of the reasons why Jack Nicholson is considered so highly is because he
crushed the 70s.
He was like, you know, a leading man in the 70s. So.
And I didn't realize that, I guess, is my point. To me, he was always like because of my age, I'm at 32, being born in 87. I didn't experience Jack Nicholson in the 70s. Obviously, I've seen a few of his movies from the 70s. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is in my top five Jack Nicholson movies. I fucking love that movie. But I have not seen some of his best work from the 70s, like five each pieces or something like that. Chinatown is another one you'll see on every single Jack Nicholson list. Chinatown from 1974. Mm-hmm. I have not seen that one either. But I guess it was just sort of a... You know, like a light bulb moment for me, like, oh shit, Jack Nicholson's sort of been an icon status my whole life.
Yeah.
He hasn't been like working Hollywood actor in my lifetime, really. He's been more of icon guy. Mm-hmm. So while he's done movies in my lifetime, like About Schmidt, which a lot of people consider to be one of his best as well, I have not seen that one either, but it's very few and far between compared to the 70s.
Is he basically retired at this point?
Yeah, he just goes to Lakers games. Actually, I've heard that he actually doesn't move from that seat, that he's just in a chair, and they wheel his ass down there, and they stick him there, and then they move him back up to his room.
Yeah, I mean, because I'm looking here at the IMDb, 2010, last film. So it's been almost a decade since he was even in anything.
I bet he's, like, unofficially retired, like yeah, if somebody came with the right project and the right amount of money or whatever. But yeah, I mean, he's not doing shit. So my favorite Jack Nicholson movies are One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, The Departed, which Matt Damon is what brought us to Jack, what brought us... We're going to do a sort of... what is that called? Like 10 Degrees of Kevin Bacon? We're just going to follow the trail, right? One of these movies will take us to our next person. The Departed is in there for sure, though. Batman, where he played the Joker. We're going to go see Joker tonight, Barrett. How about that? Things all work out.
Joker!
It all comes full circle. I will say Jack Nicholson deserves a lot of credit for setting the bar for Joker performances. He put it in a good spot. He couldn't do the full-blown dark shit yet because we weren't there in Hollywood.
Right.
Right? That Batman, that version of it, the fucking Tim Burton one, that's as dark as it got back then, dude. You remember watching that in the 90s? It was like, holy shit, this is gritty as hell.
It had some dark stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the Joker was less dark than he got in these most recent iterations, obviously.
Right.
He was a little more clown-like, a little more like Practical Joke, like he had like the thing that sprayed like poison out of his flower on his lapel or whatever. But still a very good movie and one of my favorite Jack Nicholson movies. The Shining, obviously, goes without saying. A Few Good Men, You Can't Handle the Truth, is also up there for me. And then the ones that I haven't seen that always get mentioned, I'll run through one more time, just so we can all have the list of Jack Nicholson movies we need to work through. I think I watched Easy Rider stoned in college, but I do not recall. I still have not seen As Good As It Gets, About Schmidt, Chinatown, or Five Easy Pieces, or whatever the 1970 film was called. So, my top five remains One Flew, Departed, Batman, Shining, Few Good Men. And that's that.
I'll add one to your list that I think is just, you know, overlooked, and it's a shame. That's 2003's Anger Management with Adam Sandler.
Listen, not a bad comedy. If it's on TV, it's one of those ones where you're like, a couple good scenes in here. You gotta dunk that shit. It's not a bad comedy. And if you're looking down his IMDb, it's like, there is like six or seven movies that you wonder how he got talked into doing those roles, and that's one of them, where I'm like, damn, you really just went for it here. What is his role? He's his therapist.
He's a therapist, yeah.
And Adam Sandler has to become less angry in order to something. I can't recall.
Yeah. Something. To get his life back, basically.
Court ordered.
Get his wife or girlfriend
kid
back.
Or
get his job back.
His job.
All of the above.
Okay. Anyway, that was Jack Nicholson's top five movies. This episode of OCC is also brought to you by Dave.com. If you're like me, you're not always paying attention to your bank account balance. And the moment you see that you're going to be overdrawn, it's too late. So you end up spending $37 on a cup of coffee thanks to the bank fees. That's where Dave, the Dave app, comes in, putting an end to overdraft fees for good. Dave is the number one budgeting app in America because it saves you from overdraft fees, tells you about upcoming bills, and can advance you $75 from your next paycheck with no credit check and no interest. Get the Dave app for just $1 per month. That's $12 a year. That's way less than a single overdraft fee. And you'll never have to pay one again. Dave will help you budget for upcoming expenses. It'll text you if you're spending too much. If you need cash fast, it can advance you $75 in just 90 seconds. Mark Cuban is an investor in Dave because he got crushed by overdraft fees in his 20s and doesn't want other people to have to pay an overdraft fee ever again. 3 million people already use Dave to save up to $1,000 a year in overdraft fees. That's why it's the number one budgeting app in the App Store. Dave is awesome. This thing is incredible. If you have issues with budgeting or you don't like budgeting or paying attention to your bank account as much, which is certainly how I am, Dave.com, extremely handy. Go to Dave.com/OCC. It really helps the show if you let them know you heard from us here. Do not go to the App Store. Go to Dave.com/OCC and never pay another overdraft fee again. It's immediate savings. Go now. Dave.com/OCC, spelled just like it sounds. D-A-V-E. Dave.com/OCC. Barrett, let's talk about the boys.
So many good Daves out there, you know?
There are.
Dave, our friend. Dave, the app.
Yeah.
Dave from Wendy's.
Yep.
Right?
Isn't
the founder of Wendy's named Dave?
I have an Uncle David.
See?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's how you know it's good.
Yeah, that is how
you know. Yeah, Doughboys.
All right, episodes 4 through 7. Okay, I'll talk you through where I'm at.
Okay, all right, let's hear it.
So, like, the last thing I saw, first of all, spoiler alert, if you're not caught up on The Boys, bounce, come back when you're caught up. We're going to cover the finale next week briefly, but this will be everything up till then. The last thing I saw was Butcher showing up to save Huey's dumb ass from approaching Starlight, and she's like, he admits to her that he killed Translucent.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, I'm gonna take you to the police because fuck the Supes and the Seven. At least the police will handle you legally and appropriately, and you deserve to be punished for your crime. And Butcher shows up and shoots her with some kind of crazy high-powered sniper rifle, which at first you're like, oh my God, did he just murder Starlight? And then it seems she's like, recovers very quickly.
Is it
either a special type of bullet that he used, or does she have the power to heal, and we didn't know that?
Unclear.
Okay, yeah. Up to this point anyway. I basically...
Because that part happens after we've already seen the Kimiko...
Yes, heal up.
Heal.
Yes.
Herself.
Kimiko. Yeah.
Which I think was like a pretty revelatory...
That was supposed to be this huge moment. Oh my God.
Right?
She's like Wolverine-ish.
Because
Frenchie even makes the joke, like, she fucking died.
There have been indicators that these superheroes are like resistant to bullet fire, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like Homelander is definitely, you know.
Yeah, but it's not all Supes have the ability to heal.
But it doesn't seem like
all.
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure what that is.
Even remember with Translucent, he had that fucking layer around him that they had to get through. So they had to stick that thing up his ass,
yeah.
And then he exploded.
Exactly.
Everybody's been hiding out, right? Frenchie has been burnt. Everybody's been found out. The whole fucking squad gets burnt. All the boys.
By the way, are you watching this one with subtitles?
Yes.
Okay. So, you're probably getting way more from Frenchie than I am then.
And he's the main, any show with multiple accents, dude, I'm turning it on.
Yeah,
and then Succession, it's because of the terminology and some of the fast talking shit that I don't understand.
Yes, same.
Yeah, so, and I try, for the record, I try not to look at the words the whole time. I try to watch the faces, but then if I need something or I'm like, wait, what? You can check very quickly and it's super easy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has been burnt. And you mentioned Kimiko, the Asian chick, she cannot die. She fights Black Noir to save Frenchie because when Frenchie gets burnt, they find him pretty quickly. And is Black Noir mute?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Doesn't speak.
Yeah.
And somehow, after being like brutally savaged by Black Noir, who then takes off chasing Frenchie again, he gets away, Frenchie, makes his way back to her, and is like mourning her at the end of episode 6, I believe, and she comes back to life. Her wounds heal in front of him. That huge gash across the front of her body literally disappears before his eyes. And it's like this crazy revelatory moment, like you mentioned. It was clearly, he had not seen anything like that before in his life.
Right, right. Yeah.
This is not something that another soup has to that degree, to his knowledge anyway. And just crazy to see, man. But if we want to talk about the biggest pieces of information I have so far that get revealed over the course of episodes 4 through 7, the fact that soups are possibly being bred, or not possibly, soups are being bred in a lab.
Yeah,
babies are being pumped with Compound V.
That is the that's the front page.
Yes,
right there.
Right.
Is that soups are not actually born with this innate ability.
They're created.
Vaught is creating them.
Yes, Vaught is creating them. And I guess I still find myself wondering, like, is that the case? Are all soups being created, or was there perhaps a soup or soups that then they extracted V from, and then were able to harness that power to make other soups? I don't know. I'm not there yet. And hopefully we will be one day. But the revelation that these are being created is absolutely nuts. We see the baby in its little barrier, like with like laser, like Homelander style lasers shooting out of its eyeballs.
Right.
And they're like, holy shit, they're making baby soups. And then he uses that baby soup as a baby gun.
As a laser gun.
A baby, laser gun.
Yeah.
To decapitate a man and kill like 3 or 4 other people as well. Pretty gnarly. And then he tells that baby,
this
like...
This show definitely leans into the...
gore?
The gore, yeah.
Oh, my. They really... Yeah, we should have known after ass-eating season came to a close when she's... when
True. And popped that dude's brains out. Yeah,
that was something. But these 3-4 episodes here that I watched...
Yeah.
Multiple moments where I was like, God damn.
I would say close to the... I remember texting you asking if you had like watched any of these a week ago, maybe.
Because
like, I had watched a couple more than we had originally discussed.
Right.
And like the episode where Homelander just lets a plane full of innocent people go down, like, was shocking.
Like traumatic.
You know, I was like Shiv when Roman said, fuck Congress. I was shocked.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I mean, dude, no, that was a very, very tough 20 minutes to watch. Like, they really drew it out. It made you feel it. Like, almost to, like, it's pushing the envelope of, like, when you're in there and you're creating, it's like, okay, how bad do we want to make people feel?
Yeah.
And then they're saying, fuck it, all of the bad, and taking us there with each of these situations.
Yeah, that was really something. And I also, Mike, Here was my other thing about that. Homelander is so clearly based on Superman, has essentially all the same powers.
Yeah.
With the super hearing and the super X-ray. And like, I'm pretty sure there have been episodes of television or a movie where Superman literally saves an airplane.
Absolutely. Yes.
So it was a little weird that he couldn't. Almost felt more like he just didn't.
It wasn't that he couldn't. He fucked up. He went up in there and he shot his goddamn laser through the entire front half of the fucking plane.
Yeah.
And yes, he's sort of painted it up as, oh, it was this horrible tragedy, a mistake, like, oh, it's a shame we couldn't save him. No. He blew it badly. And
but
the only person
he,
who knows that.
You don't think he could have like lift like done the flying with the plane thing?
Yeah.
I mean, he says he couldn't, so
Maybe not, because she says, like, or somebody says, like, could you just fucking land, like, fly
yeah,
it down or whatever?
There's no leverage for him, apparently.
Yeah, so. He's just a shitty person, too. He's a very fucked up person, which we get to the bottom of some of that as well.
You also mentioned, after the first two episodes, I think, that maybe it was only one that we watched, that he's got a Bradley Cooper thing going on.
Oh, very much so.
And I didn't like...
It was two we watched.
It took me a couple...
Or three,
I'm
sorry.
It took me like another episode or two, and I was like, oh yeah. Oh,
it's hardcore.
Yes. He's got a different mouth thing going on a little bit. But very, very...
The eyes and stuff.
Bradley Cooper thing going on. And he's like... He went to the same school of like actors being dicks, you know? It's like that same attitude. Speaking of actors biting other actors, not that Carl Urban is ever going to win any awards for this TV show, I don't presume, but
The Boys?
Yeah. Huh. But how much does he owe to Captain Jack Sparrow? Because I would say 70% to 80%.
Okay, the fact that you and I have never had this conversation, never texted each other about it, and that that I've had every episode, I have had a moment where I've been like, this is so biting Jack Sparrow. is a very bad sign.
Like the entire, his entire
he cannot,
bit almost is like.
It's Jack Sparrow.
I think he Barrett, even said he, savvy one, Barrett, one episode.
He gets open hand slapped in the face and like does a Jack Sparrow reaction. And it's unbelievable. It's almost like somebody should have said something. Like, we need to tweak this a bit. It's too much exactly like Jack Sparrow.
There's something else that he's pulling from that I can't quite put my finger on, which is why I'm not saying he's just 100% Jack Sparrow.
Captain Kirk.
Don't know.
You got to stop this shit. It's too late.
Well, yeah, now he's Butcher, and Butcher is just like
Jack Sparrow,
but
violent and bigger and Captain Kirk. But yeah, I don't know how to
slightly less like effeminate and swishy
a little, but I don't know how to explain how Jack Sparrow-y he is. I don't know how to, like, they should have realized it was too much, because every single person who watches this show who has seen those movies is going, oh shit, he's a lot like Jack Sparrow. Every single one of us. We meet Homelander's like dad, if you will,
mm-hmm.
like the scientist who created him, and it's the fucking guy from like The Wire and all these other he's been in a ton of stuff. Their relationship is clearly
fraught.
Yes, and he is a very messed up individual as a result, in part, of how he was created. And I wonder if he knows yet that he was created, perhaps. If he has knowledge of his origins versus like the other soups not knowing. Perhaps he is the source of Compound V.
I cannot quite tell. That is something that that I think we kind of hope to get the answer about, is whether or not he himself, Homelander, was created with the V,
right,
or if he is the origin of
right,
it, basically.
Right. Yeah, and I have to think it's that's where we're going with it. And I mean, not to put, it's the only time that conversation with the person who created him, the man who raised him, watched him through a window, threw him a blanket, the blanket that he gets so fucking upset by. It's the first time I felt like sympathetic toward him. Like, maybe I don't know the whole story about this guy.
Speaking of feeling sympathetic for him, though, because I was going to go in a slightly different direction there. I was going to say, like, if on the scale from one, you know, you got actors, right?
Uh-huh.
Joffrey is the 10.
Okay.
Where, like,
Homelander?
Can't separate the actor from the character, right?
Yes.
Like, if you see Joffrey in person,
you want to punch him in the face.
Like, your blood's going to boil a little bit.
Yes.
Homelander is getting close for me.
Okay. I'm just saying it's the only conversation that's ever even made me think, where did this man come from?
Right. Yeah.
He is pure evil.
Yeah.
And the most hateable, the disregard for the human lives that he throws to the side and just buries, is infuriating to watch. His attitude toward everything and everyone, the way he treats Starlight, the way he treats everyone except for his boss, whose titty milk he is addicted to. What the hell?
He likes to nestle a bosom every now and then. It's like an infantile thing, right?
He has a weird infantile thing. So he watched her breastfeed through the wall forever, right?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And then she, it turns out, knew the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
She has a camera pointed directly down in front of his fucking picture that he pretends to be staring at. It's not him. It's her. And she finally calls him out in this episode, brings him in, and then allows her to... like not suckle her fingers, I guess, in some sort of fake breastfeeding.
Yes.
Faux breastfeeding.
Well, and even
situation.
That, it's like almost like a thumb sucking.
Uh-huh.
It's all very...
It's very motherly, just pure motherly weirdness. Anyway, that's obviously, he's got some deep-seated issues, Homelander.
Yeah. Also kind of an Oedipal complex, right? Because he definitely wants to have sex with her as well.
Oedipus, not Oedible. Oedibles are what I have in my bag that I'm going to eat before the Joker. Oedipus is the one who wanted.
I said Oedipal, which I thought was. Is that not?
No, it's Oedipus. Oedipus complex.
No, I know, but isn't? Can't you describe that as Oedipal?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
Yeah. Okay. It's both.
I'm a pool man.
Oedipal complex, also known as the Oedipus complex.
How about that?
Yeah.
Sometimes we're both right. It's never happened before, but it sometimes apparently does happen. What else? Yeah. No. Oh, and obviously, very very important piece of information. Butcher finally shares with Huey what happened to his wife. She worked for Vought. She was in marketing, and she handled one day she handled the takeover for Homelander's Twitter account. I love how spot on and good they are with all this shit, by the way. And after the result of which, at the Christmas party or some such, he meets Butcher's wife, Mrs. Butcher, and Butcher, and then wants her to become more involved in his marketing. What we find out is that he eventually rapes her, or what we believe to be a rape. We don't know what happened behind that door. We never see, but she comes out very, very shook and disheveled and missing a shoe, and clearly then becomes pregnant with his child, very rapidly becomes pregnant with his child, maybe even in the course of several hours that child may have been growing in there with the lasers. And then obviously they try to do what we end up finding out is Homelander's creator swooped in, not the CEO as he thought or suspected, but the creator, the old guy who's no longer at Vought, whatever, he swooped in. They took her and tried to deliver the baby safely, and she was lost in childbirth. The baby only survived several seconds, allegedly. We'll find out if that's true or not, I'm sure. And that was that. So Butcher's whole journey began with the loss of his wife at the hands of being impregnated by Homelander with a suit baby that killed her, which is a very complicated story. He's then visited by a woman in the CIA who tells him she's his path to vengeance, and that sets him up upon the path of creating the boys with it's a little ironic that we have a person in the boys called Mother's Milk when also Homelander is addicted to...
I only sitting here talking about this did I realize that, but I also just made that connection. I was like, this guy loves him some bosoms and some breastfeeding, and we have a guy on the boys called Mother's Milk.
Yeah, but it's a giant black man.
That has to be, that's got to connect.
It has to.
Right? At some point,
it has to. You would think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all in all, I'm stoked to watch the finale tonight. I apologize for not getting to it so that we could hash out the entire rest of the season.
It's good.
Here today.
It's a little cliffhanger for everybody. You know. I will say one of the things I think that they've developed Starlight Annie really, really well over the course of 8 episodes. She was not somebody that I liked very much in the first 1 to 3 episodes.
Right.
And it wasn't so much that I disliked her either.
We just didn't really have a reason either way yet.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It was like, what's this chick's deal?
Right.
Is she going to go good or bad?
There were some qualities that weren't all that attractive. She does kind of come off as a goody two shoes. She is a pageant queen of sorts, right? Like she just, I don't know. They take her from kind of like this 2D ideological person or ideal of a superhero archetype even.
Sure.
And then like by that 7th episode, really by the time that her relationship with Huey becomes more advanced.
And they sleep together and shit.
I'm just like all in on her. Like I really like her. I think her performance is really good. And the character of Annie/Starlight is to me probably the most compelling one on the show right now.
Yeah, she is our main character.
Yeah.
In my eyes, she is the main character, the character we are supposed to be most heavily invested in what happens to her each week, right? Or each episode. Her relationship with Huey progressing into full-blown, like him saying he's finally able to push aside the loss of his girlfriend or whatever and open himself up to this Starlight, and they sleep together, and then in the end she finds out he murdered Translucent and the whole thing falls apart. But yeah, she's definitely been, over the course of these first 7 episodes I've seen, has just become more and more and more likable. I mean, her meltdown at the Christian camp saying like they just want me to read you these fucking notes.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I mean, there is nothing I like more than somebody being real, even if it's about something that like is potentially against my beliefs. Even it, being full of shit is a terrible look. It's a terrible, terrible look, and it never plays long term. And this chick is not full of shit. She's refusing to go the route of just reading the note cards, right?
Yeah.
But then she's approached by the CEO, who tells her, like, you're not going to fucking do this. You're going to do it the way we want you to do it. And she kind of tries to battle back against that. It's going to be interesting to see where she lands. Like, at some point, I would have to think she ends up on the boys, but in the boys, or with the boys. any of those versions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I don't know how we get there if she remains on the inside.
Right, double agent
type of situation would probably be more realistic than her full-blown joining the boys. But she also needs to find a way to work the Seven and remain important enough, so this final episode is going to be incredibly interesting. I cannot fucking wait. I have a very entertaining night ahead of me. I get to watch The Joker. I'm likely going to play some video games and stream after that, and then watch the boys to go to bed. So you should all be very, very jealous. Be very jealous of my life. New sponsor alert. Pay attention, folks. No skipping. This episode of OCC is also brought to you by Figs. I think there's something all of us can agree on. Nurses, doctors, dentists, and people who work in medicine and healthcare are pretty awesome, and all of us can think of a time when a medical professional helped us or a family member, and these amazing people dedicate their lives to caring for and serving others, so they should have scrubs that make them feel good and look good. Right? We think so. What these amazing people do every day is more than just a job. What they wear is more than a uniform. Shouldn't they wear scrubs that help them feel good and perform at their best again? We think so, and so does Figs. Figs is an amazing company that is making scrubs stylish and functional for the people who deserve it most. For years, nurses, doctors, dentists, all the awesome medical professionals were forced to wear scratchy, ill-fitting scrubs. I don't know if you know this, but I was once a doctor for Halloween in college. Actually, I think it was actually a fraternity thing, and they forced me to be a doctor, and I had to go get some scrubs. And I went to a scrub outlet. Okay, they had one in San Marcos, Texas. And I went to
the outlets,
trying on scrubs, and they're the most uncomfortable pieces of shit in the entire world. Awful. It was like, I can't fucking believe that doctors and nurses wear this shit every day. And that was like my first experience and only experience with scrubs up until becoming familiar with Figs. They're awesome. So much more comfortable, so good looking. The old shit was ugly and very uncomfortable. Wasn't designed with any innovative technical properties to protect or hold life-saving tools. Figs creates the highest quality medical apparel so that medical professionals look at their best, feel their best, and perform at their best every day. Every set of Figs is antimicrobial.
Antimicrobial.
I can't read words well sometimes. Protects from germs and bacteria. Ridiculously soft, moisture-wicking. Features four-way stretch. They're made with yoga waistbands and come in a variety of styles from classic straight legs to joggers and skinny styles. You gotta look at this shit. It's gonna blow your mind. It's gonna blow your mind. I am wearing a pair of Figs jogger-style scrubs to the movies tonight so that I'm not freezing my ass off in the theater because movie theaters are cold. It's 91 degrees outside. I'm not wearing them all day yet, but in the movie theater.
They do some base layer type stuff, too. They got a t-shirt. I got a very cozy long sleeve t-shirt.
They're really doing it.
You know?
I mean, so they are really...
There are some options that go beyond your humble scrubs.
Yes. And every time you shop at Figs, they give scrubs to healthcare providers in need around the world through their Threads for Threads initiative. To date, Figs has donated hundreds of thousands of sets in over 35 countries. Speaking of giving, Figs make great gifts for the lifesavers in your life. You know, a doctor, a nurse, a dentist, whatever. Figs gift cards are available, so the next time that dermatologist or pediatrician saves the day, tell them thank you by sending them Figs. Whether you're one of the awesome humans that work in healthcare or someone that wants to say thanks to these deserving folks, Figs is going to make that very easy for you by providing 15% off your first purchase when you use the code DRAGON. Get ready to love your scrubs. Seriously, I know a lot of you listening are not medical professionals, obviously. Go to the website. Head to wearfigs.com, WEARFIGS.com, and enter our code DRAGON when you check out. Look at the stuff they've got.
Great gift options. If you have a nurse or a doctor or anybody that wears scrubs in your life.
And
friends. If
you have no one, might I recommend role-playing with your significant other? Get yourself some scrubs and have a little playtime. Have a little play. Barrett, it's time.
Paging Dr. Freaky to the bedroom.
Dr. Freaky. Oh, fuck. Okay, we're going to see the Joker. And I have a couple lead-up hype questions for you here,
okay,
Barrett.
Okay, all right.
First of all, how much do you know about what we were about to go see?
Okay. I know that people are mad that a movie is being made about a crazy white guy who is...
The world beats down.
Who feels oppressed... And acts out with hardcore violence. I know that this movie is directed by Todd Phillips, who brought us the Hangover trilogy, yes. One of which, excellent. The other two, complete trash.
You know what I was told also about Todd Phillips recently when
What's
I was
that?
Playing golf with these guys? Fucking Todd Phillips, apparently before he became Todd Phillips, did a documentary about fraternity life in which he was a pledge of a fraternity and they allowed him to document the entire experience.
Wow.
Didn't know that.
Did not know
Gotta
that.
Gotta Google it, but...
I know that this film is pulls lots of inspiration from
Taxi Driver,
which we mentioned earlier.
One of the first pieces of information that came out about it during even the filming that it was inspired so much by Taxi Driver's vibe.
I know that Joaquin Phoenix is getting like Oscar buzz around the performance, about the performance.
They've pretty much given it to him at this point, as I last checked.
And I know that this Joker movie like exists in a DC universe, but is like not currently supposed to be connected to any other franchises.
If they ever connect it to anything at any point, I am just going to lose it.
Yeah.
Because that is how we get the Avengers. And I don't need 26 fucking movies about the same goddamn superheroes.
Yeah.
No offense to Avengers fans. I know there are millions of you. It's like the most successful franchise in the world right now. But it's like, I don't want to see that. Don't Avengers my Batman. You know what I mean? Like, don't... The fucking Suicide Squad was already a massive L for all of us. Everyone involved. Everyone who watched it. Everyone who fucking acted in it. That was a loss, and they're still trying to run with that with Birds of Prey. Hopefully it pans out.
Yeah, I mean, the issue is that this movie is like a certified smash, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if this movie wasn't named Joker and wasn't about a character that like the world knows about, there's probably never any controversy because this is just a little Joaquin Phoenix art house flick.
Right.
Two, like it doesn't make anywhere close to as much money.
Right.
As it's making. So it's just like, even the studio that it like let Todd Phillips go do this kind of super gritty, noir, violent take on Joker is going to look at the receipts here be like, fuck, how do we make more money off
of
this?
Well, okay, I'll say this. You and I haven't watched the movie yet, but you cannot spin real darkness into a franchise like that. It just doesn't, like, how do you take grit and level of gore and violence or whatever and then franchise it? Like, I just can't see
that.
So I'm not that worried about it. But I'm about the same level of knowledge. I've seen not the newest version of the trailer. Now they're putting out, like, more footage and shit. I'm avoiding all that. I've seen none of that shit. I fucking saw... The only reason I noticed is because I saw a staircase scene, the one that, you know, they show in every trailer and every... picture you see, and he was doing more dance moves that I hadn't seen before, so I was like, fuckers, they're putting out more footage. But no, so I don't know much beyond what you just mentioned, and that's the way I wanted to go into it too, is like, I know Joaquin Phoenix, and the second that this started getting the hype that it did, I was like, I'm all in on this. Joaquin is the Joker, that's all I need to know, really. Then I found out Todd Phillips was the director, and I was like, okay, this is really weird. Todd Phillips, the Hangover guy. Then I found out that Todd Phillips was inspired by Taxi Driver in his the way he chose to do the film. And I was like, okay, I'm all the way back in, like, times two. And then when they decided to ride out the controversy of, like, the white man, the seemingly oppressed white man who strikes out against society with violence and ruins lives and people hating that, you didn't hear anybody apologizing. And guess what? After the fucking opening weekend and another week of marketing and some more commercials and shit and a ton of Oscar buzz and perfect 10 scores and people calling this like a revolutionary film that may be one of the greatest acting performances of all time from Joaquin Phoenix, all that shit is gone. They buried all that shit. And I respect the way they did it because, listen, I don't even like the fucking argument that we shouldn't be glamorizing an oppressed white guy who then strikes out against society. I am not glamorizing him. I'm not going to watch this movie thinking to myself, man, I want to be the Joker. That would be fucking stupid. I've wanted to be Batman since I was three. I do not understand. It's a movie, right? Like, it's a fucking movie. I didn't go see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood thinking one day I want to bash somebody's brains in on 14 different pieces of furniture in my living room. And I won't think after this is over, man, I'm really glad to see... the Joker. What's his real name, by the way? I always forget.
Something Fletch. Alfred Fletch. Arthur Fletch.
Arthur Fleck?
Arthur Fleck. I'm pretty sure that's it.
Arthur Fleck. That is correct. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I look, man, I'm just not really into any type of censorship whatsoever. If you want censorship, I think you would have to go to China or Russia for that.
Well, you deserve an award or something right now. Speaking of awards,
I will say, I mean, obviously, like that, people are not worried about you or I. We're well-adjusted individuals, so
that narrative
is like pointed at people that are on the brink already. I disagree with it because you got to let people make the movies that they're going to make, and then
it's art, and then
it's just a wildly slippery slope. Like, let's not make movies about gangsters anymore either, right?
People want to do gangs.
Yeah, like The Godfather glamorizes the mafia and makes people, right?
You know, we shouldn't make movies about slavery because then people will want to bring back slavery. So it's like, no, fuck all that, dude.
The argument is like pretty short-lived in my
opinion.
Thank
you. I appreciate that because it bugs me to no end. And it's worse when you're like a white dude who's psyched for the Joker and then people are trying to make you feel bad for it. It's like, what, dude? Fuck you, man. This is my movie night.
Well, we'll talk more about the coverage of it on our Patreon episode.
Of course, on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles, where we will be doing at least 50 minutes, I can guarantee, on the Joker after we see it tonight. We'll be recording tomorrow evening, and then we'll put it out on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles for all the members of the Crustacean Nation, our $5 tier, and then our Mollusk Militia tier, which is $10, and you receive an additional episode if you're in that tier, and also a exclusive hotline just for you and the Mollusk Militia. Very excited for the movie, very excited to cover it for y'all on that podcast. As I mentioned, we also have the Righteous Gemstones season 1 wrap-up coming on patreon.com/oystersclamscockles in October. We'll discuss the entire season of Righteous Gemstones in that episode. Fleabag season, and the way it ends, mostly. Fleabag season 2, we're going to talk about the entire season in an episode of a podcast on Patreon there as well. As I mentioned, Mollusk Militia, you'll get your hotline call extravaganza if you're in the $10 tier, the Mollusk Militia with your own Mollusk Militia hotline. And when you sign up on Patreon today, if you just found out about OCC, if you've never joined the Clam Fam, you have no idea who Barrett and I are, welcome, first of all. We hope you enjoyed the show. Tell your friends and family about us if you're watching Succession, especially. But our whole backlog on Patreon is available as well. So, like, you have a lot of episodes to work through of this podcast now. Congratulations. But you also have a lot more on Patreon, which you should feel good about. Plenty of entertainment for you. You're almost as lucky as me with my evening with the Joker and the video games and the Boys finale after that. Barrett and I love doing the show. Thank you all for supporting us, especially on Patreon, but also by supporting our sponsors. Remember, that is a very important part of what we do here. Our sponsors pay us money to do their advertising, and we try to choose sponsors that work well for our audience and that we actually believe in and stand behind their products. So we hope you all will continue to support them to support us as well, because that is the entire basis for our business. Follow us on social media. We're on Instagram @OystersClamsCockles, on Twitter @ClamsAndCockles. We're also on Facebook.com/OystersClamsCockles. You can follow me, Ross Bolin, on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat @WRBOLEN, @WRBolin. WRBOLEN. And you can also listen to my other show, The Ross Bolin Podcast, a comedy, humor, mental health, addiction, substance abuse, animals, pirates, serial killers, history, and current events podcast, available wherever this one is available. Oysters, Clams, and Cockles. Barrett, where can we follow you on social media and hear more of your lovely
voice?
You
can follow me at Barrett Dudley, 2 R's, 2 T's, Instagram and Twitter. You can catch me, you know, just flipping through on night mode, because I have a new iPhone and night mode super tight. So there you go.
How about night mode Instagram, though? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've heard some complaints. I think it's awesome.
I was rock hard in there last night, dude, when it flipped over to night mode. Went in and I was like, whoa, everything is sexier.
Yeah.
Everything in there is sexier.
Yeah. It's a lady.
Can you do one more, like, Kendall? Just do something.
I just would like. Okay, night mode. You clearly have an intentional bias against our company and the ideological system that we have here at Instagram with the night mode. So I thank you, sir.
Day man. We even worked in a fucking Always Sunny joke in this episode. That has never happened before.
So, check out my other podcast. It's called Club Cool. You can follow it on Instagram @ClubCoolPod and hear it wherever you're listening to OCC. And I'm just not even going to tell you what it's about. You're just going to have to go figure it out.
You want to know, though, don't you? Now you really want to know. You're like, fuck, what does he talk about? It could be fucking, it could be anything. What if it's just he only records while he's pooping each day, and that's it? That's not it, though.
It could be.
That's my other podcast, Potty Time with Ross. We should leave. All right, we're going to go see the Joker. Y'all tune in on Patreon for our coverage of Joker. We're stoked. Adios, muchachos.